You're listening to That'll Preach. We have Paul back in the studio today, my co-host Dr. Paul Rizkala, the prestigious scholar, athlete, Renaissance man, visionary of our times,
rapper.
Beatboxer, rapper, breakdancer, and sous chef. Paul, it's good to have you back here in town again. I feel like you visit every couple months, and then we get to crank out a bunch of episodes talking about whatever is on our minds. And it's a lot of fun. I'm glad you're here with us, Paul.
It's good to be back. I always feel weird when you give me that lofty introduction. Like I feel I'm unworthy.
You are.
Thank you.
But, you know, that's why people tune in. You know, sometimes I'll have interviews with people who are really important.
Real scholars.
And then on the off season, I go to the Walmart version, the off-brand scholar.
The bottom of the draft pick.
Which is you. Yeah, exactly. You're the bottom draft pick. No, but you are a scholar in your own respect. You are somebody who thinks a lot about issues, ethical issues, bioethics. That's what you're studying over there in Waco, the land of Waco, Texas, Baylor University. Shout out to the Bears, right?
Sick 'em Bears.
There you go. Oh, that's pretty violent.
That's what we say.
Well, we wanted to do this podcast because we had a bunch of things that in our personal conversation, some interesting conversations we've had between each other about some of the things that you're studying and thinking about. Mm-hmm. And the issue of frozen embryos, specifically as it relates to IVF, in vitro fertilization, and reproductive technologies, that whole controversial subject, controversial in Christian circles as well, is seemingly all over the news. Obviously, there was some laws passed, and it's raised the question about what's the moral permissibility of freezing embryos.
Embryos
during the process of IVF, or rather as a result of IVF.
Yeah.
Freezing fertilized eggs. And so if you're a Christian with a Christian worldview, you view life begins at conception. So a fertilized egg is a human being. I think that's should be uncontroversial among Christians. But let's just start there. So you don't want to eliminate eggs that are the product of IVF. You don't want to kill human life. That would be inconsistent. But the issue of freezing them, a little more dicey, a little more controversial.
Yeah.
And just fill us in on why this is now public news, why this is something that is taking up the airwaves, so to speak. The Instagram waves, talking about IVF and specifically the issue of freezing eggs or freezing fertilized eggs.
Embryos, I can't speak to the Instagram social media stuff, probably not dominating people's Insta feeds, but Alabama recently changed its designation for frozen embryos from property to persons. So previously, if you had frozen embryos, they were considered your property. They'd be stored in cryogenic tanks and clinics. And if something were to happen to one of them, it would be like some of your property was destroyed. And so you'd be compensated for loss of property. You'd have to take out insurance for property. But now that an Alabama court has decided, well, actually, these are persons. And they cited actually scripture and Christian ethical teaching that every human is made in the image of God from natural conception to natural death. Then that means these embryos have a human dignity, and so we should respect the embryos as such. And so it leaves us in a bit of a problem, not just in Alabama, but how do we think about frozen embryos more generally? And so for those who are unfamiliar, the process of in vitro fertilization uses gametes from both male and female and creates embryos outside of the uterus. Oftentimes what happens is couples who are seeking to, they've got infertility issues, they're trying to have a baby or trying to have a kid, they will create the embryos outside of the womb and then try to successfully re-implant. But what happens is either by choice or by necessity, there are extra embryos. And so the question is, what do you do with these embryos? And some people opt for just destroying them, just getting rid of them. A lot of people will save them and freeze them. And so there's about 1.5 million frozen embryos just in the US today, not to mention the millions more frozen embryos across the world. And so there's an interesting question now. What's the status of these embryos? And if you're a Christian, you have to, well, okay, we've got the image of God from natural conception to natural death. What is the best way to respect human life? So I guess there's a couple of ethical questions that arise. Once you have these frozen embryos, what should you do with them? What should we do to respect their dignity? But also, should we freeze embryos in the first place is a question that we can ask. And what respects human dignity? And so, yeah, those two distinct questions. And if you're a Christian, you should have, there's a stake. The stakes are huge for this debate because we're not just dealing with clumps of cells. We're dealing with the image of God.
So this could be obviously a sensitive issue, but just because it's sensitive doesn't mean we should not talk about it.
Right.
And this is something that's, again, in the current cultural discourse, people are now talking about this. And I think the church should be able to think through this and the implications of it. And I think it's hard not to have an emotional tie to the conversation because you're dealing with things like infertility, you're dealing things with, you know, giving birth and life and procreation and sex and all these types of things. But we do have to be able to think clearly about it and think with, you know, hopefully the scriptures and divine revelation as our guide and our understanding of how all this works. And, but specifically, that's true. We have to establish if we're going to say that fertilized egg is a human being, the embryo is a human being, then there's implications with that we cannot avoid.
Right, right.
Even if it's a sensitive topic, even if it could say that, yeah, maybe actions people have done are wrong. I mean, we have to be mature and old enough to say, like if we can't have that conversation, then we're going to be severely stunted in our ability to have moral discernment. Now, what's interesting though is, so Roman Catholics have had a tradition of being saying, you know, contraception is impermissible, IVF is impermissible, that you don't want to separate the act of sex from the end of procreation.
Yeah. Right.
Now, we're not going to spend this, you know, time debating that fact. But just what's interesting is within Catholics, there's a little bit of a debate about
what to do with the embryos once they're there.
Right.
Yes.
So maybe we could start off by saying, one, is it ethical to freeze embryos? And then two, what's the debate among Roman Catholics about that and why that's an interesting debate for Protestants to kind of listen into?
Yeah.
Because I think Roman Catholics would say no freezing embryos.
Right. That's
Is that right?
Right?
Mm-hmm. And I do think that makes sense.
Yeah.
But then from that, it's okay. Well, once you decide not to freeze the embryos, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And that's a very interesting discussion. But maybe that first part, well, how would you make the moral case not to freeze embryos? I think most Christians would say we don't want to destroy them, but
that's right.
Freezing is not killing. It's not as morally bad, but what's your take on that?
Yeah. So there's a couple of thoughts here. And just from the outset, there's no knockdown argument, but I also want to reiterate the sentiment that you started with here, that these issues are really live issues for people that they're dealing with. And when you look at in scripture and even just in human history, one of the perennial problems for women and couples is infertility, like not having a child. When Hannah doesn't have a child in the Old Testament, she's weeping. And it really is, we're not downplaying that. If anything, that it shows us how great of a good children are. And when the gift of children is not there, how painful that can be. And so we want to take that really seriously. But we don't also want to sort of the ends justifies the means. And we don't want to say that technology can be the answer to all of our problems. And so there are some cultural instincts that I think Christianity can push back on that helps us further affirm the dignity of human persons and also not outsource all of our problems to technological solutions. So I think that's where I'm coming from. And I want to think about this through a distinctly Christian lens. And one thing I think that's really important, and we were talking about this earlier, that when we think about what it is for a parent to have a child, that relationship there, we think about the relationship between the Father and the Son. When we say the Nicene Creed, when we talk about Jesus as the only begotten Son of God, the Gospel of John uses that language. That language of begetting is a really distinct kind of relationship that illustrates a really tight union or tight connection. That from the beginning in Genesis, like begets like, that creatures beget similar versions of themselves. And it shows a kind of continuity of kind. And there's something about outsourcing the process to technology that undermines a little bit of that. So when you have these embryos that are frozen and left over, those are human beings. Those are people that deserve human respect. And there's a kind of instrumentalization of those individuals by sort of, well, that's on my time, or I want to have children so badly that if there are extra embryos, then we're just going to store them and leave them, and maybe we'll get to them later. But there's, like, even just the way in describing that, it feels icky. It feels a little bit like that's not what you do with a child. You don't make a child and then cryogenically freeze them. That's a human person. There's something almost weirdly dystopian about that. And if that's hard to hear, then I want to affirm the instinct that says, like, these are children. We should look at it through that lens first and foremost, rather than, if it's something that I've done or if it's something that I've participated in the past, like, fundamentally, these are human persons. And that should shape all of our discourse on this. What do I do when I've got human beings and I've outsourced them to a clinic and just left them there to be cryogenically frozen? That's a really serious moral issue. And it's one that I think Protestants can't affirm the same sorts of values that the Roman Catholics are operating on. It's not anything from, like, the extra biblical books. It's not like something from a papal decree. It's just look at the dignity of human persons and look at the sanctity of the marriage act and look at the goodness of children as a gift from God, not as a product of our techne or our technology. So all those sorts of issues, I think they get at, we don't want to outsource the natural process of having kids and begetting kids to a technological mechanism. But even if that's the case, having leftovers and sort of treating these extra humans as leftovers, or they're at my disposal. I have a kind of, like, well, I get to decide what to do with them on my timing, on my convenience. It reifies all of these cultural instincts about it's all about me and it's myself and it's my timing and it's my, but what if it's not about you? What if children really are a gift from God and every embryo is a human being worthy of respect because they're bearers of the image of God? And so the question is that a way to respect the image of God by cryogenically freezing a human being?
That's a good distinction because, again, this is not even getting into the ethics of whether the process of IVF is permissible. I think that's an important conversation to be had. But specifically,
yeah,
let's just even say, we'll put that aside.
Yeah.
Let's say it can be permissible. Even then, we still have to deal with, okay, we know for a fact we don't want to destroy embryos.
Right.
But then the freezing of them, what you're saying is, what ethic is that revealing? That we get to choose when this child mm-hmm. comes. Even if you plan for a child, it's still up to the providence of God whether that actually happens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much can you really plan? But for this, you can actually dictate the timing of everything.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't mean that everything's going to be successful.
Right.
Right. But there is a sense in which are we adopting a mindset in which this is about convenience?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess you could say, would you freeze a human being?
Yeah.
If you decided that you have a newborn and you're like, well, time's really busy. I'm going to freeze them and then yeah. wait till I have a little more
mm-hmm.
money or a little more time. And then I'll unfreeze them and start raising them.
Yeah.
Is that an accurate analogy?
Something depersonalizing about that. Yeah. Where
right.
you're making it about your convenience again.
Right.
And it's contributing to a greater culture that's already suffering from, like, death by convenience, that everything right. is at our fingertips. And this is yet one, like, the greatest human good, arguably, that is marriage and procreation and child rearing. These are some of the greatest goals that God has called us to, that even those we've sort of subjected to convenience constraints. and we're willing to perhaps put human dignity at risk in this freezing, in these clinics, that it almost feels dystopian. Like, imagine walking into a clinic and just thinking there are thousands of frozen tiny human beings in this clinic. Like, it's almost like a scene out of the Matrix or like a post-apocalyptic world. There's something that seems contrary to God's good design about that. And is that really respecting these people?
Well, the difficulty is sometimes it doesn't seem that way.
Yeah.
I think that the difficult thing here is that just because it doesn't feel like something wrong is happening doesn't mean something wrong isn't happening. I do think, and I think I've said this before, that when it comes to embryos, when it comes to, you know, abortion and all these things in our society, the dirty secret is we don't feel like,
yeah,
intuitively, these are human beings. We feel like they're a clump of cells,
mm-hmm,
right? And I think that's until we see an image of like a, or we hear the heartbeat, or we see it, like we're visual creatures, we're auditory, mm-hmm, like we need to sense it. And then we start going, oh my gosh, that's a human being,
mm-hmm,
right? And I think it's difficult because these embryos, we don't, it's kind of like you can feel the eye roll. Come on. It's not the same thing as a 3-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, but logically, and that's what matters.
Yeah.
If it is, it doesn't, even if it's sensitive, even if it doesn't feel like it, we have to be able to just deal with the reality and the facts and recognize that our intuitions are going to deceive us in this area.
Yeah.
And so you have to stick with principle over even just your intuition. Mm-hmm. But I do think there probably is, if you frame it that way, which is true, there's a bunch of frozen human beings,
mm-hmm,
waiting for their parents to decide when they, mm-hmm, can come into the world or whether they can fully develop, because they're in the world.
Right.
They're just,
their development is halted.
They have a halted development. Mm-hmm. Just because it's uncomfortable, just because it feels not intuitive, perhaps,
mm-hmm,
doesn't mean that we, you know, the conclusions are the conclusions, whether you like them or not, whether they're comfortable or not, whether it makes you uneasy or not. And, but we have to be able to have these conversations. And, so talk about this. So then you're saying if we knew that they were human beings, and they are, it would be unethical to stunt their development,
mm-hmm,
for the sake of convenience. And you could even say, if you get triplets, that could be harmful for the mother to give birth them all at once,
mm-hmm,
which then is like, okay, but then that's an uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah.
And you certainly don't want to put their, you know, I mean, what would you say to somebody if it's like, okay, well, we have 3 fertilized eggs. If we have them all, it's going to put my wife at risk at dying in childbirth, giving birth to triplets.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that?
I mean, I think it pushes back against the whole process to begin with. And this is, it's my view personally, that I think that the outsourcing of procreation to technological means is just, it's not the right way to think about procreation. And so if the idea of frozen embryos makes you uncomfortable, like it should, I think that also puts pressure on the whole industry of IVF. Now, it is possible to make a distinction between the two and say, well, I think IVF is okay, but I'm just not going to freeze the embryos because I'm convinced by the arguments. I think it's disrespecting the persons. But we really want to have a child that's, you know, biologically related and genetically related. I think that's a consistent position to take, but I do think that the uncomfortability with frozen embryos puts pressure on the whole enterprise that is technologically producing kids.
And I think it's important, if you think through IVF, if you're going to have to think through all of the consequences or what's going to happen out of it. Yeah. And I think it's morally informative to say, even though it's permissible, let's say it's permissible to do IVF, here are things to consider. You can't kill,
mm-hmm,
the embryos.
Yeah.
Okay. And also you can't freeze them.
Yeah.
And so, okay, with that in mind, what do you think now?
Yeah.
And again, might be uncomfortable, might not like that, but that does not change the moral realities. And so I think people need to be able to think through this, think through these difficult things, and the church needs to be able to do this with sensitivity, with compassion,
absolutely.
But also it's like, we can't act like there's not a moral answer. We can't leave these things simply just floating in the air just based on what we feel,
mm-hmm,
you know?
And this is, I mean, it goes to a deeper problem that we've talked about before. Just every technology comes with a consequence, and you might not feel it in the moment. Like, the appeal of technology is always in the immediate convenience it gives you, but we don't always ask the question of downstream, what am I going to have to deal with morally speaking? So even something as innocuous as the car, like the first generation to jump on getting cars, there were going to be repercussions. I mean, there's going to change. It might make infidelity easier. It might make your communities fractured. It might make it, you're more likely to commute further for work. And so it destroys family. Like all those things are always downstream from technology. And one of the lessons here that I think we're just learning over and over and over again is that let's not be quick to jump on the technology. Like let's stop and think and reflect a little bit. Let's be reflective people who are bringing the Christian worldview to bear on technology instead of rushing headfirst into it. And then 10 or 20 years down the line going, oh shoot, we've got millions of frozen embryos. How did we get here? What do we do with this? That's the instinct that I think we should try to push.
Well, you're not saying we shouldn't have cars.
No. But I'm just saying, let's be reflective before we jump headlong. Sure. At least be, go into it clear-eyed and know the cost, count the cost. Is it worth adopting this technology? Instead of realizing on the back end, actually, oh shoot, I've got these frozen embryos now. What do I do? Because we weren't being reflective in the process to begin with. And this isn't to be judgmental or to cast aspersions on people's characters, but these are important issues that I do think if we really want to live with a Christian worldview, then that means it's going to permeate everything, every facet of our lives. And we want to glorify God, even if it means recognizing that, perhaps we were unwise in some of our decisions or how we thought about certain things. And being willing to say that, cultivating a tendency or normalizing being okay with, saying I was wrong about this, or maybe we should rethink this so we don't make the same errors going forward. It's those sorts of conversations that I think the church needs to be doing better. The Roman Catholics do that. They've got their whole teams of ethicists and theologians, and they're writing documents, and some are good, some are bad, like I think we're going to talk about. But at least having that culture where, we're reflecting on technology and we're not sort of just leaving it up to individual private judgment, that maybe there is a way that God actually wants to live our lives. And so let's discover that communally and not just leave it to individual private judgment.
Well, let's talk about the Catholic discourse.
Yeah.
So you talk about there are some discussions. Once you establish we shouldn't freeze embryos, there's a debate about what you do with those embryos after they're unfrozen.
Yeah.
So what's the debate?
So, I mean, it's really interesting. I didn't even know that Roman Catholics disagreed about this, but some Roman Catholics, because there were two documents written by the Roman Catholic Church, Donum Vitae and Dignitas Personae, that basically say you cannot take one frozen embryo and put it into a womb that's not the natural mother's. It is just, you can never do that. So frozen embryo adoption is impermissible, even if it means rescuing that frozen embryo from a cryogenic chamber. You just can't do that because it is a violation of the woman's womb. It's a violation. It's not the natural home of that embryo, because that embryo is somebody else's genetic material, was conceived outside the womb. And so it's a heterologous embryo. It's someone else's. And so they think that this is a violation of natural law. It's a violation of the woman's womb to use that womb to gestate another fetus that wasn't conceived naturally there. And that, I think it's insane. I feel like I'm trying to be charitable, but if you're pro-life, if you really think these are human beings, if you think they carry the image of God, I can't see how you can come to the conclusion that some of these writers will say, well, what we should do is we should just thaw all of the frozen embryos, let them all die, and then have a day of mourning as a way to respect them. Now, I respect the consistency of that, but is that really the best thing to do?
Is that consistent, though?
Well, I mean, they want to say that, okay, it's because they're not conceived naturally. They're like sort of these products of technology that therefore we shouldn't implant them back in the womb. It's a violation of the reproductive faculty, the generative faculty, the gestative faculty. And so there's a kind of like unnaturalness to that. And so we shouldn't re-implant. But I think that's not the way to respect these. Think of it as a rescue case, right? So we adopt kids all the time. We think that that's noble and heroic and a great thing to do. this is another case of adoption. It's a rescue case. Like these are less developed humans that need a womb to be their natural home for a few months so that they can be viable outside the womb. Like that's what they need. And if people who are infertile want to take those frozen embryos because they want kids, right? They want to adopt.
Their own embryos.
Any embryos. I think that should be permissible. Like, I think that's fine.
That anyone can take anyone else's embryos.
Like, let's say that like
basically surrogacy.
Not surrogacy in that, like, you're not being paid to use your... Surrogacy is when someone is paying you to use your womb temporarily.
Okay.
So this would just be a case of adoption. But think of it as it's a frozen embryo adoption. It's not a post-birth adoption.
So it could be another...
It could be another.
It's not the mother's child.
But imagine the initial mother dies, right? And so now this embryo is just frozen. And there's another infertile couple that goes along and says, you know, we'll adopt that frozen embryo. We can't conceive naturally.
Right.
Let's adopt the frozen... Let's implant and then gestate and then we'll have our own. These Roman Catholic bioethicists say no. That is a violation of natural law. And I think that's inconsistent with the pro-life ethic. And I think it elevates a kind of, they're so confident in the application of this natural law principle that they're willing to risk the lives of 1.5 million.
What is the natural law principle?
That it's impermissible to use your womb to gestate someone else's fetus.
But you can't, so they would be fine
if it was your own embryo? Yes, some will say yes. Yeah, but there's even debate about that.
Okay, so it's not about whether the mother can be like, okay, I realize I shouldn't have frozen this embryo. I'm going to now immediately implant it. It's my own child. They would not debate that. They say that's fine.
Some of them would, but there's more consensus that that's permissible. What more people think is impermissible is what's called heterologous embryo transfer, which is someone else's embryo.
So if there was
you cannot adopt an embryo.
Okay, so if there's a bunch of people going, there's all these frozen embryos. I don't think that's right. The mom does not want to have them. I will have them as an adoption.
Yeah.
I will give birth to them.
Right. These two Catholic documents say no.
Because it's wrong to place a foreign embryo into another.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. And
the only issue with surrogacy is the exchange of money.
Yeah, that it's exploitative.
So right. She's not going to raise the child.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. So a lot of Christian bioethicists liken surrogacy to prostitution. They're not the same thing, obviously, but it's paying someone for their body rather than for a skill or a service. So it's not like an employee relationship. It's you're just literally just paying somebody for the use of their body for a certain amount of time. And a lot of Christian bioethicists think that is, it's exploitative and it's not respecting the dignity of the human person to pay them for their body, to use them as an instrument in this sort of way, even if it's financially compensated. And then there's worries of, okay, well, who are the women who are going to be jumping to the front of the line for these surrogacy things? It's poor women, women who need the money, women who, so it is exploitative in that way as well, too. It's like, you can think of all these power imbalances and rich people who want to have kids, but I don't want to go through 9 months of morning sickness and all this. So I'll just hire this poor woman and give her my fetus and have her. And so it creates all these sorts of issues that, again, come back to this. It's not always about your convenience. It's not always about you. And our instinct to outsource when it's difficult is more a reflection of our desire for convenience than it is, you know, meeting or fulfilling the healthy desires that God has put in us.
Okay, but to the person who's more hardcore than you, of saying, you know, because it's wrong to place someone else's fetus, or rather embryo,
for an embryo,
mm-hmm. because that's wrong, it's better to just let the embryos die.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're saying that's insane because what are they missing in their argument?
They're not fully grasping that these are human beings.
Well, they do. They say that's why they mourn over it.
Savable. Like they're easily savable.
Right.
And there are lots of infertile couples that can't conceive naturally. And if you're going to allow adoption, right, you might worry that this position actually condemns adoption too. Like this is a case of a foreign child coming into a home that's not their natural home. But we think that's beautiful. We think that that's our relationship to God.
Yeah.
God adopts us into the divine family. We are now heirs with Christ when we weren't initially. So that picture, if you think adoption is okay, it doesn't automatically mean that frozen embryo adoption is okay, but there's a kind of like parallel there. And I worry that if you make too much of, well, it's not the natural home of this embryo, it's not the natural home. Well, the child who's adopted after birth, that's not their natural home either.
So how would they respond to that? It seems pretty reasonable.
Well, ultimately they think it falls back on these natural law principles. And I think there is, I'm trying to be as charitable as I can, but I do think this argument is insane. But they'll say that it offends the institution of marriage. It offends the act of procreation. It offends the woman's womb or the woman's generative faculties but I don't see that that's the case. What constitutes a perversion or what constitutes a violation or all these sorts of things. And even if it is, like, is it the sort of thing that, are we more confident that gestating a foreign embryo is a violation of a woman's generative faculty than we are that it is a good thing that these 1.5 million frozen embryos can be raised to term and then be given homes? Like, it just seems like we're placing far too much confidence on an application of a natural law principle that we should not be that confident in its application when there's 1.5 million frozen embryos at stake.
So dignitas personae, I think that's how you say it. The origin of human life has authentic context in marriage and in the family, where it is generated through an act which expresses a reciprocal love between a man and a woman. Procreation, which is truly responsible vis-a-vis the child to be born, must be the fruit of marriage. Mm-hmm. So you have done these embryos a disservice by conceiving them outside the act of sex.
Yes.
But it's not just the act of sex, but sex within marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So is there some spillover to children born out of wedlock?
Well,
they're not born of the fruit of a marriage.
Yeah.
Even though they're born of sex.
Yes.
Is there some kind of, does this affect that as well?
Well, I mean, that is not ideal. And if you think, what's the ideal? It's that a married couple, through procreation, that act of sexual expression, a child is begotten. Like that is the natural ideal process. And you, to the extent that you mess with that process, to that extent, you're moving away from the ideal. So if you get rid of the marriage condition and it's two people, they're, you know, expression of sexual, whatever union, and they have the child, there's something good in that. Yeah. But it's not ideal because it's missing the marriage component. And then they'll say, okay, well, you've got two married people, but it's not through the sexual act. It's through a technological process. That's a child that's valuable and has the image of God and all that stuff. But again, there's something non-ideal. And then you have a child who is conceived outside the womb and it's someone else's child and it's implanted into your uterus, a foreign woman's uterus. They'd say, again, not ideal. There's something that went wrong in that. Not ideal and wrong. Whereas I would say not ideal and permissible. If it's, you're doing it because you are saving the child.
But you don't think IVF is permissible.
I don't. Yeah, I don't.
So you have those three categories. One, you have unmarried couple,
mm-hmm.
sex, child.
Yeah. Married couple, no sex, child.
And then you have
married couple, no sex, someone else's child in your womb.
Okay. Now, three, permissible.
Yes.
But not ideal.
Yeah.
Two,
impermissible.
Impermissible, not ideal.
Mm-hmm.
One, not ideal, but permissible.
Well, I mean, we're not going to
because I'm wondering
kill the child, but it's impermissible. Right. You should not do it. Like you've committed a sin in having sex outside of marriage. Like that's the sin.
Right. Okay.
So it doesn't affect the status of the child as like having the image of God.
Sure. Of course.
Like so,
okay. So it would be the issue in category one, unmarried, natural sex, child, is that they did the right act in the wrong context.
Sure.
And then the second one would be they had the right context with the wrong act.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the third one.
The third one's a little bit of a different.
It's a different beast
altogether.
Okay.
But,
I see.
You've got someone else's frozen embryo and you're trying to adopt that. And some Roman Catholic bioethicists say no. But a lot of them do agree with me. They think that actually, yes. So there is debate within Roman Catholic circles about this. And the questions they will ask are, these two documents, are they actually binding? What level of authority do they have? Or also, Are we interpreting them correctly? So some people actually disagree about the interpretation of these two documents and say they're only extending to IVF. They don't actually talk about frozen embryos. I don't know, like that's really in the weeds of this Catholic theology. But the point I want to make is I think it is permissible and healthy to rescue a foreign frozen embryo into a womb, especially when you think about like infertility and you think about people who want to adopt. And you think about, again, going back to what we said at the start of the episode, all of these embryos are human beings made in the image of God. So you have to ask the question, how do we respect them? We either leave them there forever and we just like use millions and millions of dollars of resources, and eventually it's going to run out and they will thaw. They will thaw it eventually. Or do we intentionally thaw them out, let them die and have a day of mourning? Or do we allow for frozen embryo adoption?
Now, for the frozen embryo adoption, it would be via in vitro fertilization, or not fertilization, but
Well, they're already fertilized. They're there. Like the embryos are there, they're frozen. You just implant.
And that act is not wrong.
If you're one of these Roman Catholic bioethicists, you say, yeah, you say that act is wrong because that child is not your naturally conceived child.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be like saying, see, the method of IVF is okay if you're trying to save a life.
No. Assume IVF is illegal. No one's doing it, but we still have all these frozen embryos. Yeah. The question is it permissible? And these two Roman Catholic documents seem to say, no, it's not permissible to implant someone else's frozen embryo into a woman.
And you're saying that if you do that, that's sort of like saying it's impermissible to welcome another child who's not genetically related to you into your home.
Yeah, I think there's a structural similarity there. And if your point really is, well, it's unnatural to take this foreign embryo and gestate and raise it, then what's stopping the move from, well, okay, this child who's already outside the womb and they're living in an orphanage, right? Forget like a cryogenic clinic. They're living in an orphanage in horrible conditions. Their natural home is not your home, but it's still good to rescue them and bring them into your family. And I think I do think they're analogous. Obviously, there's some disanalogies. You're not gestating in one, but you're gestating in the other. But I do think that if you think of it as a rescue case, like what do you do? I mean, I can't rescue these embryos. I don't have a womb. But for women who do have wombs and you can rescue these embryos and you know, that should be permissible, at least in principle. What I want to push back on is this Roman Catholic line of argument that says it is in principle impermissible. You just can never do it. And that seems wrong. It seems like another reason to not be Roman Catholic.
Well, this is great because the touchier subjects, and especially when you're dealing with something so personal and fraught with sensitivities and all these kinds of things, that's actually the point in which you need the most clarity.
Absolutely.
Those are actually points where you need the most instruction and thoughtfulness about it. Mm-hmm. And you have to have the painful conversations about that because I do think people are going to ask, you know, this is a question about ethics. It's a question about the Christian faith. What does God think about this?
Yeah.
I mean, like that matters. And if we can't have conversations to think hard about this, it is on the church, I think, to give instruction about this to its people.
Mm-hmm.
And if we haven't thought it through yet, well, we need to start doing that and be consistent with our answers and have this discussion. Not that it's an easy conversation, not there isn't nuance, not that you can't disagree on these things, but we can't just act like everyone just do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
We have to really think about this, and people are going to suffer and the church will suffer if we don't take that seriously. So
I like when you said it's about figuring out what God thinks. It's not just when you tell people, this is ethical and unethical. That sounds kind of abstract and sterile and just, well, who cares? Like what happens? Like, it's just, this is what an ethics textbook says, but that's not what we're asking. We're asking what is actually good for us as human beings and what's part of God's good design for us. What does God think we should do? Because he's the one who created us with our bodies. And so he knows what it means to thrive and flourish and what it is to live languishing and poorly as a human being. And we want to discover how to live well. And this is just another question that we have to answer to, you know, point us, is doing this enabling us to live well? Is it in accordance with God's good design for our bodies or is it not?
Hmm. Fascinating discussion. We'll have to think more about it, but it does raise a lot of questions. I mean, we can't say, well, the Bible doesn't know about reproductive technology. So it doesn't speak on it. It's like, well, but that's, a lot of people use that for
Abortion.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bible never talks about abortion. So therefore you just go ahead and have an abortion.
Right. But there are good, and there's like the Westminster Confession, good and necessary consequence. Mm-hmm. That we take the principles and we have to work them out with wisdom and thoughtfulness.
Yeah.
And it honestly, we can't just punt and say, well, there's no verse about, you know, freezing embryos. And it's like that, you know, that we're trying to cut corners there. We're avoiding a conversation. Mm-hmm. Right. And we can't do that. And so again, hopefully that's what I hope with this podcast. We have this conversational style so that we can have people listen in on things we're talking about as we're wrestling through it, as we're talking through it, as we're sharpening our thinking. Mm-hmm. But hopefully this can be a surrogate conversation for you. You know, the conversation can happen through us so you can think through it and hopefully it can help you wrestle through these issues on your own, or you and your church and all these types of things. But definitely need to keep thinking through it. And maybe we'll do some more podcast episodes about this.
Yeah,
get even more controversial.
Great. Sure, but, let's do it.
You know, look, all the grace in the world, just as loaded as conversation is, if we can just try to remove ourselves from the emotional context of it and just think through it logically, I think that can help bring some clarity to these issues.
Yeah.
While also understanding the immense sensitivity and the tenderness that needs to accompany it. Mm-hmm. But great conversation, Paul.
Yeah, this was fantastic.
If you guys appreciated this episode, make sure you support us on Patreon just for $2 a month. That's it. That's all we're asking. Go to our Patreon. It'll be in the show notes. You can also follow us on Instagram, and we have a YouTube channel, That'll Preach Podcast. Make sure you share this podcast with your friends. We'd love to hear a good review from you guys. If you want to leave a good review, that helps us out a ton. But thank you guys for listening. Please spread the word. Appreciate you guys, and we'll catch you next week.